Hello and welcome to the Flying Reporter Pilot Briefing Podcast. In today's briefing, a victory for fair pricing. That huge increase in parking charges at some Scottish airports has been overturned. Why an untidy altimeter could help you avoid a mid-air collision. And the official report into the crash of that eVTOL air taxi prototype at Kemble is out. Now, my inbox has been buzzing over this last few months, with many of you writing to me, venting your anger and frustration about the huge 300% increase in charges for GA using airfields operated by HIOL, Highlands and Islands Airport Limited. The airports they operate include Inverness, Dundee, Islay, Wick, Stornoway and Barra, for example. Now, on the 1st of April, a new set of charges came in for aircraft up to 10 tonnes, which increased parking charges to £40 for 4 hours and then £2.50 per hour, all excluding VAT, which meant that an overnight stay would cost in excess of £100. They also introduced a new navigation charge of £15 plus VAT for all aircraft. One has to have some sympathy with airfield owners and operators who clearly have to make ends meet, but the GA community was infuriated by what they saw as extremely unfair pricing that would deter anyone but rich pilots from landing at these airports. Lots of people and bodies, including AOPA UK, complained to HIOL. In fact, even one of my team contacted them a couple of weeks ago. They didn't return our call, by the way. But it seems that all the pressure has now caused a rethink. They've reintroduced a parking category for aircraft less than 2.5 tonnes, which is, let's face it, pretty common now. It now costs £10 for 4 hours and then 60 pence per hour after that, excluding VAT, which is far more affordable. The navigation fee, however, is remaining. I expect a lot of other airfields will now be thinking whether they should be doing the same. And where does that end? They'll be charging a fire crew fee, a runway sweeping fee, an electricity surcharge, perhaps. Who knows? Interesting times. At least HIOL should be commended for listening to the community's concerns. A shame, though, that they didn't have the foresight to understand our community better in the first place. The Flying Reporter Pilot Briefing is sponsored by Flyer Watches. Flyer sell an excellent range of aviation-inspired watches that just look great. But here's the really clever thing. Everyone sold helps someone learn to fly. 20% of the profits from most of their watches fund PPL scholarships. I have their Swiss-made Horizon watch. I'm really happy with it. For me, who's particularly clumsy, by the way, I always knock my watches into things. It's great that it's scratch resistant, water resistant, and of course is very good at keeping proper time. It came with a 14-day return policy, a 2-year warranty, and free worldwide delivery. So if you're looking to bling up your wrist, want to support a small aviation business, and help someone learn to fly at the same time, check out their range at flyerwatches.com. So my instructor always used to tell me to never fly whole round thousands of feet. He'd say, don't bomb around at exactly 2,000 feet because everyone else is doing the same and you're going to hit them. So using the take two principle of keeping 200 feet from the base of controlled airspace underneath the London TMA, I now fly around that area at 2,300 feet, which is as high as I can go. I like to be as high as I can go for, you know, being able to glide in the event of a problem. But now, of course, everyone else is doing exactly the same as me. Everyone underneath the LTMA is flying at 2,300 feet. So I wonder if there's any other way of adding a bit of randomness into the altitudes I and you fly to give us a little bit more mitigation against the risk of a mid-air collision. Well, according to the director of the UK Airprox Board, having an untidy altimeter might be the answer. Now, if you're one of these people that likes things just so and so precise, this might trigger you, I'm afraid, so be warned. The director of the UK Airprox Board is now suggesting that we could fly at 50 feet intervals, so not hundreds of feet or thousands of feet, but 50 feet intervals to give ourselves a little bit of extra randomness to the levels we fly. Now, the director's comments follow an airprox between an Augusta Westland 109 helicopter and a DA-40 near the Compton VOR last summer. They were both flying at 3,000 feet, had both been using the Compton VOR for navigation, and had both tried, but had so far failed, to get an air traffic service from Oxford and Farnborough, respectively. I think they were too busy. They'd called in and hadn't yet got a service from them. The two came to within a tenth of a mile of each other at exactly the same level, and thankfully a collision was avoided. Due to cloud, airspace and flight rules, it's often not easy to find a suitable semicircular flight level or altitude to fly at, and so that doesn't offer much, if any, protection. If you remember from your studies, and I know there isn't much opportunity, certainly down in the southeast of England, to fly semicircular levels because of the airspace above us, you'd fly at odd and a half thousands of feet if you're above 3,000 feet VFR, if you're between, what is it, north and south, and if you're between south and north, it's even thousands of feet plus 500 if you're VFR. It's whole thousands of feet if you're IFR. So that's just something to remember, and it's something I do if I travel elsewhere. But as I say, around the LTMA, there's no room to select the right semicircular altitude. So the director of the Airprox board says that actually, why don't we fly at 2,950 feet or 2,750 feet, which might just add a small additional layer of protection. Interesting. Another comment they make about this particular Airprox that I mentioned just now is about the timing of our frequency changes. Perhaps having just crossed or about to cross a honeypot, such as a VOR beacon, it's not a great time to then be heads in trying to make a radio call and changing frequencies, as at that time, around that honeypot, we should be focusing on looking out. So some wise words there, something to think about. I know I do really like a tidy, I'm having problems by saying the word altimeter, because I usually call it altimeter, and then people come on the comments and say it's not altimeter, it's altimeter. Anyway, that's why I'm stumbling over the word altimeter. I like a tidy altimeter. It's then easy, I think, to fly accurately, I suppose, because you can see the needle spot on where you want it to be. But perhaps I'll try and see how hard it is to fly still accurately, but at 50 feet increments instead. Also, I'm wondering how that will work with ATC. When they ask me for my altitude, I'm not entirely sure. Reporting that I'm at 2,250 feet is the right thing to say. I know if I heard that on the radio, I might giggle at that level of accuracy. Finally, for today, a quick word to note that the Air Accident Investigation Board has published its report into a failed test of Vertical Aerospace's VA-1X eVTOL air taxi Golf Echo Victor Tango Lima. The aircraft was undergoing a test flight at Kemble Airfield in August last year and at 30 feet above the ground. The purpose of the flight was to test its performance with one of its eight engines, or should we say electric motors, inoperative. The aircraft was being operated by a remote pilot outside of normal aerodrome operating hours within a sterile area, all for safety reasons, of course. The aircraft took off, climbed to 30 feet, was then commanded to accelerate towards 7 knots. At between 2 and 4 knots, there was a loud pop and a propeller blade was released from the motor. The imbalance of that caused structural failure of the right inboard pylon. The aircraft was unable to maintain height and struck the ground with a vertical descent rate of more than 1,100 feet per minute. The right wing failed, the nose gear collapsed, and there was other structural damage. There were no injuries, no external damage. The aircraft and the detached propeller remained well within the sterile area, so good job there. According to the investigation, the adhesive bond between the propeller blade sheath and spar allowed both to move radially outwards, increasing bending on the blade spar, which caused the outer section of the spar to fracture and separate. The loss of the blade, which had been spinning at 1200 RPM, caused the large out-of-balance forces leading to the structural failure of the pylon. According to the report, the remaining propeller blades of this type have now been withdrawn except for ground testing. New generation 2 blades are being introduced, and the manufacturer has identified 36 product and process improvements. Well, that's what it's all about, isn't it? These changes include improvements in quality control, supplier qualification, design and verification processes, flight control laws, controller area network data bus architecture, whatever that is, and the routing of wiring harnesses. We can all understand that. On its website, Vertical Aerospace says that it welcomes the publication of the report. And in relation to the failure of the propeller blade, it says it's no longer using the same supplier. The path to innovation is never an easy one to navigate, and I wish Vertical Aerospace every success in the future. Well, that completes this Pilot Briefing podcast. The next episode comes out at the same time next month. Thanks for following along. Be sure to subscribe to the Flying Reporter Pilot Briefing Room YouTube channel or the podcast for the next in the series. Until then, fly safely, folks. Bye for now.